What's up? Welcome to First Things First. I'm Ebony K. Williams sitting in for Miss Jenna Wolf. That there, Hall of Famer Chris Cutler. What's up?
Good. Welcome back.
Welcome. Nick Wright, looking fabulous today.
Good to see
today.
You as well, Ebony.
Ebony, I have to apologize. I'm going to tell you, it's Friday. And this guy on Fridays now, he gets a little out of control. So I'm just hold on to your seat.
We'll be good.
On that side of the table.
Good to see you this morning.
Well, TGIF, fellas. Thank God it is Friday. Coming up live in our studio, NBA champ Kevin Love. Also, LeBron James apparently knows who he wants to have as his coach.
Oh, there's no doubt.
But we're starting with last night's playoff action. All right, Sixers-Raptors, game three. Now, if you're one of those people wondering if Joel Embiid's knee or that stomach bug were going to be an issue, don't worry about it. The big man went off for a game-high 33 points, 10 boards, and 5 blocks. The Philly crowd serenading Embiid with MVP champs. Now, the Sixers won big, 116-95, to take the 2-1 series lead. Chris Carter, how were the Sixers able to just blow out the Raptors last night?
Well, this is what I'm gonna
pass it off here.
I'm not gonna pass it off. What do they say as far as my time? I'm gonna.
I'll yield my time to that
yield.
Senator.
Yes, because I've been watching a lot of TV and everything.
You and I were talking about something before the show that I wanted to make this point initially. So I appreciate you giving me this.
I don't think anyone has been more pro Philly at their best because you do this thing. And you're a weird guy,
best
but
versus
smart.
Best.
Yes. Like, when a team or when a player plays at its best versus another team
at their best.
Yes.
And so this was the Philly team that I've been waiting for all year. Mm. This was the Philly team that I didn't know they were going to have Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris, but the Philly team that before the season, picked them to go to the NBA Finals, that once they added those players, I was even more emboldened, even despite what Boston or what Milwaukee was doing and what Toronto was doing and what Boston maybe one day could do, was even more emboldened that Philly would go to the NBA Finals. But the Philly team that I had to at some point abandon because we just weren't seeing this. And what this was Joel Embiid seemingly fully healthy, fully emboldened and fully given the reins of this team to dominate a basketball game in under 30 minutes on both ends of the court. Mm-hmm. This was a Philly team where when you had all 5 starters out there, you had no good options. You had no, okay, we'll let him beat us. Jimmy Butler was playing both ends extraordinarily. Mm-hmm. J.J. Redick and Tobias Harris were hitting open shots, and Ben Simmons was doing Ben Simmons things, particularly on the defensive end, and Joel Embiid was a world destroyer. Now, we only saw this starting lineup together 10 times in the regular season. Now we've only seen them together 17 times total. And I still have some trepidation that can they duplicate this? Can they do this 2 more times to beat the Toronto Raptors? A Raptors team that I thought going into last night, despite having lost home court, was still in full control of this series. I no longer can say the Raptors are in full control after the beatdown Philly put on them, but can Philly repeatedly do this? Because if they can, they not only can beat the Raptors, this version of the Sixers, the best version of the Sixers, can beat anybody.
Yeah, and if we have the answer to 2 questions, and if those questions are what I think that you would say them to be, number one is Joel Embiid and his overall health. Not only health, but his weight and his overall energy. Because when you've missed the amount of time that he has missed since the All-Star break, it's impossible to be a 7-footer. We have seen 7-footers struggle not only with injuries, but with their cardio once they come back to the game. There is a certain weight that he should play at. And right now, he's not at that weight, but last night, you could see that the knee was not giving him the trouble that we've seen in the postseason thus far. And he did warn us, I'm going to figure out Mark Gasol. Just give me a little bit of time. And in last night's game, you can see that. And if their bench, Joel Embiid's health, and if their bench continues to play like this to be able to help them out, they got a little bit of boost last night by having Mike Scott back into the lineup. He didn't have a great game, but it's comforting to know that you have him. James Ennis III, man, he has been spectacular in the last couple games. They haven't even had J.J. Redick to play spectacular.
Nope.
Tobias is getting back into the swing of things. So they are a dangerous team. But the thing is, how consistent can a young team be with the limited amount of time, Nick, that they have spent
on the court
together?
Where they're gelling as we speak. We're seeing them play. This should be that you should play your 18th game as a starting lineup together before Christmas. Well before Christmas. I mean, last night was their 17th. The other element of this series that I need to admit that I may have misdiagnosed was how deep is Toronto really. When DeLon Wright and C.J. Miles go out the door in the Mark Gasol trade along with Jonas Valanciunas, when O.J. Anunoby it has an emergency appendectomy as their best reserve and
that
now
hurt
he's
them.
Not there.
Yes.
And when Fred VanVleet has been just terrible this series.
Uncomfortable on the court.
Right. And Serge Ibaka, who was having a resurgent year, is having a bad postseason. Well, now we're at five reserves, two that got traded away, one that's playing poorly, one that had an appendectomy, and one that is not shown up yet to the series. So now all of a sudden, Philly's biggest weakness, their bench, if the benches can play each other even, then it's all on Kawhi Leonard to be even more brilliant than he's been through three games. And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no. I had a question. You said you're a little bit trepidatious, even though this, what you saw last night is lights out Philadelphia team. Chris, you mentioned they're being young, right? Mm-hmm. These young guys, super talented. I want to know from both of y'all, where's the mindset after that type of blowout game? Are they more likely to feel themselves, feel really confident and duplicate it to prove Nick's point? Or are they more likely to start feeling themselves too much? Do they now get the big head and get their feet off the gas?
Well, this is the thing. If you look at the players and you listen to them in the press conferences, I believe it's really important, especially in Philly, to listen to Jimmy Butler. Because he's the guy, you know, he's got a volatile personality, but these young guys seem to listen to him. Ben Simmons is great because you don't hear him say a whole bunch. So now it's a matter of Joel Embiid. And if you go back to a couple of the press conferences early in the playoffs, when Jimmy Butler started sitting next to Joel Embiid, Joel Embiid looked over there and said, he's here to make sure I don't say anything. You know, so he is the mature person. So I believe it's become important that these younger players look to Jimmy for his leadership. I believe that Jimmy, in games 2 and 3, has helped stabilize not only this franchise, but he's helped grab this series where they can gain control of it. So I believe a lot of that is leaning on Jimmy. Are they going to continue to lean on Jimmy Butler? And that's been the biggest difference to me.
And Jimmy Butler is empowering Joel Embiid on the court as well. If you saw the mic'd up segment
that was great
in last night's game, he is telling Joel Embiid, shoot it. Shoot it. If it's an open three, shoot it. And then talking to him on the bench, telling him to shoot it. So now, on the Toronto side, here's the other thing that's happened. A team that thrived this year without Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi was extraordinary, but they were able to... He missed 22 games with load management, and they were able to play well in those games. They weren't as good without him, obviously, but they were fine. They now, all of a sudden, look like Cavs teams when LeBron goes to the bench in the years past, which was all the work that LeBron and company did while he was on the court all gets undone in a 3-minute rest, a 4-minute rest. The on-court, off-court numbers see from the regular season. Look at the offensive rating in the regular season without Kawhi. It's not as good as with, but it's 106.8. It's fine. And then the first round, it drops to 77. And so far this round, it's 54. It's less than half of what it is with them on the court. So this is what I'm going to say to Kawhi Leonard, who is playing like one of the three, not one of the five, one of the three best players in basketball, and an argument as the best player in basketball. He's got to be able to play moving forward in this series like LeBron would have to, 42 to 44 minutes a night. They have rested him up to this point in the season to prepare him for it. He is in the athletic prime of his career. He seems fully over that injury. It is nobody in the playoffs right now is being asked to do that. Steph and KD don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. They're not even asking Harden to do it. Giannis isn't being asked to do it. Right now, at least in game 4, which becomes basically a must-win game for Toronto, Kawhi needs to go into that game. Nick Nurse needs to go into that game saying, we're going to rest Kawhi for 2 minutes at the end of the first quarter, 2 minutes at the end of the third quarter, and he's going the other 44 because Toronto doesn't have an answer offensively with him on the bench.
Yeah, I think it's important that no one else besides LeBron has been able to do that. So we need to be careful as far as the expectations that we put on other players. LeBron was in that situation, and the numbers indicated that the Cavs were bad. Toronto just started getting bad with Kawhi off the court. With Kawhi on the bench, because it's not just a Kawhi on the bench. In this series, they're shooting 24% when he's on the bench. So it's not as if they're not getting shots. Right. They're just not making those shots. So that's got to be one of the adjustments moving forward. If they're going to gain the home court back, be able to win in Philly on Sunday, they got to be able to shoot the ball better. And that's what I was hoping in last night's blowout. In those last 5 minutes where they had the reserves in there, I was hoping Van Fleet was going to get a couple to go in. Serge Ibaka to get a couple buckets to go in. But they didn't. So I can understand. Yes, Kawhi last night, I think he played 36 minutes. I would try to bump that up between 37 to 40. But I would be careful with the LeBron James as far as putting anyone in that 43 to 45-minute category.
And just real quick, to Nick Nurse's credit, Kawhi last night would have played 40-plus if it wasn't a blowout. Yes. You know, he was on pace to play 40-plus. I think they got to recognize that has to be the expectation for Game 4. You win Game 4, you can go back to a regular rotation. But Game 4 becomes a must-win game for Toronto.
All right, can't wait to see it all go down on Sunday. But coming up, are the Warriors suddenly a bit vulnerable now with Steph Curry's finger issue? That's next on FS1. And remember, you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, it's Nick Wright. A quick word from our friends over at Indochino. Did you know that made-to-measure suits fit better compared to generic off-the-rack suits? Many say that a man looks better and feels more confident when he puts on a suit. Indochino is exactly what you need. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from, not to mention the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. So here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom of your choice located across the U.S. and have them take your measurements personally. Or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric, both inside and out, choose your design customizations, submit your measurements with your choices, and then kick back and relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in just a couple weeks. This week, our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering the code FTF at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. Again, that's Indochino.com, promo code FTF for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deals for a premium made-to-measure suit. Once you go custom, you don't go back.
All right, we'll get to the Warriors in a second, but first.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Some highlights presented by Hilton. Sixers, Raptors. Kawhi Leonard drives past Greg Monroe, delivers a left-handed dunk. Look at that. Nice.
There was a brief about 10-minute stretch of this game that I had listened to on the radio because I went to go pick up food. And on satellite radio, you get the Philly broadcast. And the Philly announcer's call of this play was so disheartened and depressed. Mm. It was just Kawhi Leonard drives to the basket, gets a left-handed dunk. And then when I saw the replay, I was like, that was a great play.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
Pretty off beautiful. His opposite foot, man. Opposite hand.
All right, same game, fellas. This is Ben Simmons throwing a one-handed oop to Jimmy B here.
They had it rolling last night. Ben Simmons and Jimmy Butler running the offense. More Jimmy Butler was running the offense. Ben here, it's one of the things he does. Before the defense able to get set, put pressure on the defense. Lob City and Philly last night. They had a good time. My boys Happy and them were at the game. They invited me to sit in the box. But, man, getting back on
Happy
the train.
And them, your boys were there. D-Jack was there. Meek Mill's there. Zach Ertz. Alshon Jeffrey. It's a veritable who's who.
It was a party, fellas.
Oh, no.
All right, finally, Joel Embiid wrapping up a monster night, just a sick night with this beautiful, this is a windmill dunk he does, and then he comes into like an airplane
yeah,
mode.
Yeah, no, and here's my question. I need our wonderful and now svelte statistician, Dusty, to look this up. Is Joel Embiid the largest human to pull off a windmill dunk in game? Has anyone bigger ever pulled off a windmill in game? My guess is no. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
Well, if he is the biggest, that this would be a new record because when he did it earlier in the season, he did that same one earlier in the
right,
season.
But he's bigger now. He's heavier.
Lighter.
Yeah, that's what I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm
trying to be a little shady.
I caught your corny joke.
I see what you did there. Moving yeah, funny, on now
funny
to
guy.
The Warriors
funny
and guy. Rockets.
That's my
now, game three is scheduled for
Mr.
Saturday in H-Town. Okay, the good news for Golden State is KD is playing lights out this postseason. Kevin Durant averaging 35, 5, and 5. Now, the bad news, Steph Curry dislocated his finger in game two, but he is expected to play tomorrow. So, Nick, how important is it for the Warriors to take care of their business even with Steph's finger issue?
Well, if the Warriors win tomorrow, they are not three steps, not two steps, but about half step away from the third straight championship. If they win tomorrow, they win this series, and then we will see who they face off with in the NBA Finals, but that will be their last remaining test. The Rockets were supposed to be and have been since Kevin Durant got there the only team to actually threaten, scare, or worry the Warriors. And if they jump up 3-0, it's all over but the crying in Houston. So it's a closeout game essentially for the Warriors, which means it's an elimination game for the Rockets. Now, even if the Rockets win, the Warriors are still in control of this series, but then all of a sudden, the pressure shifts a bit in game four. Then all of a sudden, the Rockets have a real opportunity to say, hey, if we can get it to 2-2 after four, we'll take it. Best of three against Golden State, same situation they found themselves in last year. And I think that the national media in general is not making enough of Steph Curry's lack of production in this series, and now the fact that he has a dislocated finger. The Rockets have a good defensive game plan against the Warriors as a whole, particularly Steph Curry, and the idea that he's going to be better 3 days after dislocating his finger, I don't think he's, of course he's going to play and he's going to get his shots up, but it's, in my opinion, it's going to affect him. It's going to affect him a hell of a lot more than Harden getting raked in his eyes will, and that is really important for this Rockets team that is going to, we would assume, play with a level of desperation that they did not come out ready to play with in game number two.
Yeah, I do expect the Rockets to play with desperation. As far as, I think it's a key point to that people aren't reading into it because you talk about the reason why he's going to have problems. It's not shooting, it's on his obvious hand, but it's his predominant ball handle. And that's the way he handles the basketball. And how does Steph get open? Steph doesn't have the great athleticism that we have in Russell Westbrook. He doesn't have some of the other things that we have in point guards, but his ability to handle the basketball, that's what gets him open. Besides running off those picks and everything, and he's not just a sit in the corner, he's going to get the ball and be able to knock it down. He typically has some movement or he's dribbling the basketball. So I can understand your concern. To me, it's not only the finger, but it's also he's still coming off that ankle where he tweaked his ankle. So the more, if Houston can get this, the longer they can make these series, the toll on Steph's body, I believe, ultimately. But if they're able to get through this game, we know that that's Rap City. They're not going to be able to get back from down three. So what are the adjustments that the Rockets have to make? The Rockets have to, and I know Nick's like, everyone knows they got to shoot the basketball better. But with the analytics, the thing that go with the analytics, there's three things. Shooting the three for the spacing on the court, getting into the restricted area, either getting layups and or dunks, the highest percentage, and getting to the free throw line. We know they can get to the free throw line. We know that they're going to probably catch fire at home. But the restricted area, they're not getting there. During the regular season, 26 shots in the regular season, and now only getting 12 shots in the restricted area against an undersized Warriors team. So do I go undersized, and how do I still accomplish the objectives that I've always wanted? I want to shoot the three. I want to drive to the bucket, get in the restricted area. It doesn't have to be with lobs. We're going to have to figure out another way.
Right.
And to be able to get that shot total up. And I believe, watch that number in the next game.
Get into the bucket. You're 100% right. And that was why James Harden was more efficient in game two than game one, was he was actually driving to the basket and trying to finish. Driving to the basket, not going with the floater because he didn't have to, not going for the lob, but actually just going with his left-handed or right-handed layup and laying it in. Now, they didn't get back in transition defense on a few of those. They gave those points right back. But that's
Chris Paul's responsibility.
Right. When Harden ends up under the bucket,
they got to rotate.
Somebody else has to get back because Harden's at that point 97 feet from his own basket. On the Steph thing, one other note. Yeah. What has made Steph not just the greatest shooter ever, but in the argument for best player in the world, is because he doesn't just shoot. He finishes at the rim at an absurdly high percentage for a guy his size. Mm-hmm. He only has taken 5 2-point field goal attempts this entire series. The Rockets have made, it's been threes or nothing for Steph. If he is hampered with his dribbling ability, and when you're closing out, you're not worried as much about him shot faking going around you. You're not worried about him catching going to the basket. He's never easy to guard, but easier to guard. Because what the Rockets can't have happen is what hasn't happened yet in the first two games, but they're still down 0-2. Curry catches fire. If Curry catches fire the way the rest of the Warriors are playing, they don't have many paths to victory. The Rockets are going to continue to dare Andre Iguodala to beat them. And if Andre Iguodala keeps shooting this percentage, the Rockets will lose. Mm-hmm. You can't beat the Warriors with KD, Steph, and Klay if Iggy and or Draymond are also hitting shots. Van Gundy says it all the time. If Iggy hits shots, you lose. Like, that's just how it works, which is why you typically lose, because somebody's going to hit those shots. I don't think the Rockets are going to change their defensive game plan. They might change some of their offensive game plan, to your point, and they might change some of their rotations because Clint Capela has been so ineffective in this series.
Yeah, you cannot continue to give Iggy. He's given you 2-game sample size. You know he's going to hit those shots. Hitting 41% of open threes and leading the NBA in dunks in the playoffs. That right there, he's found the fountain of youth. That right there is one of the most impressive stats of all the things that we're looking at. And if they're going to get the 3-0, Iggy's going to have a huge piece in that.
All right, do or die in H-Town.
Yes.
All right, we're going to see.
Should be a great game tomorrow.
Coming up, is it Super Bowl or bust for the Dallas Cowboys next season? That's next on First Things First. All right, back here on First Things First. Now, make sure you stay with us. At 9 a.m. Eastern, NBA champ Kevin Love is joining us live in studio. We got so much to talk to the 5-time All-Star about. That's going to be so fun.
Cannot wait.
I put in a request for him to bring in Little Kev.
Oh, yeah, that should be good. Let's see if he does it.
All right, fellas, time for us to go viral. Check out friend of the show and Villanova head basketball coach Jay Wright here throwing out a first pitch at the Wildcats baseball game. Fellas, I want y'all to watch closely because I want you to put a grade on this throw.
Let me see.
Check it out.
Oh, no. All right, coach, you can't bounce it. They tell you not to throw from the rubber. They say that's going
to
screw you up.
Yep.
Now, when I've thrown out first pitches, I throw from the rubber and I've never bounced one. Now, there's a little bit of more of an arc to mine because I want to make sure I don't bounce it.
Yeah, he doesn't have enough of a leg kick, and probably because coach trying to be fashion forward with them skinny jeans on, he couldn't get it. So he over-rotated his shoulder. That's why the ball went down. I used to be a little
good
coach
doing
and everything. You got
right,
to match the shoulder rotation with the leg kick.
A to F? Oh, I got it. Listen, sorry, coach. You're my guy, but you bounced it. That's an F.
That's a F? Chris
it's an F. You did the one thing you can't do.
Hey, I'm all about incomplete. I felt like
incomplete.
You didn't have enough time. Yeah, go back. He needs some practice. He should have thrown something in the back.
When's the last time you threw out a first pitch?
I threw out one when I got in the Hall of Fame, like 2013, Cincinnati Reds.
Oh, so
got an
speaking
a.
of,
oh,
imagine
okay.
that.
Oh, leg kick. Okay.
Oh, there you
That's
go.
An a. That's yeah. an A.
I put a little something on it. Mm-hmm. I put a little something on it because they didn't have the referee checking the ball and everything. Put a little hair grease. Yep. Went to the back.
Yep.
Got the grease on it. Mm-hmm. Watch it curve at the end. My brother Butch said it fooled him. See it drop on
oh,
him right
yeah.
there?
Oh, yeah. A little 12 to 6 curve.
Also, the relaxed fit jean.
Yeah, back then. That was before Obama.
No, it was good.
Then I saw Obama. When Obama went skinny, I went skinny.
I understand.
Relaxed fit, grandpa, almost.
Now I assume.
They're not MJ jeans, though. You good.
No, they're not.
And now, see, I want to show you guys when I did it for the Kansas City. Oh, our producers didn't pull the video of when I did it. To shame, because it was a strike, man. Clocked in at 86. Right down the middle?
I'm sure you got an A.
Yeah, they only video.
Now it's time now for the AT&T wake-up call.
I'm sure they have the radio
Raptors
replay.
Game
3.
You're
such a jerk.
They're so silly.
Joel Embiid throwing out the first pitch, people.
Embiid went off.
Mom and dad are excited. The babies are here.
10 boards, 5 blocks.
Let her speak,
Sixers
please.
Win big, 116-95. I ain't paying y'all no attention. To take the 2-1 series lead. All right, Chris Carter, how exactly were the Sixers able to just shut down the Raptors entirely last night? Just shut them down.
Joel Embiid, he was special, and he got the right type of contribution. He was so patient on the offensive end. When he didn't have the type of shot, he was able to dish it out for other people. But if you look at them, how they played, Jimmy Butler, Tobias, Ben doing what he wants to do, J.J. Redick knocking down a couple big shots. When they're playing like this, man, the Raptors, we thought the Raptors were a better team. We have to reanalyze that after 3 games.
Well, and one of the reasons we thought the Raptors were better is their depth. Their depth has not shown
yes.
up, and they are really missing OG, who's out with the appendicitis. And, hey, man, Kyle Lowry.
Oh,
come on, Kyle. Like,
started the season as their second best player. Is struggling to be their third best now.
2 of 14 from three in this series, 13 of 36 overall. Kyle Lowry. I like Kyle Lowry a lot, but these playoff struggles are now just the norm for him.
I have to bring back a segment I used to do. Hashtag, where you at?
Where you at, Kyle Lowry?
Where you at? All right, Bucks-Celtics. This is game 3 tonight in Boston. The series currently tied at 1-1. Now, Giannis will look to build off his dominant 29-point Game 2 performance. Kyrie, on the other hand, well, he's looking to forget his 4 out of 18 shooting woes in Tuesday's blowout loss. Nick Wright, which team needs Game 3 more?
Oh, I believe Boston needs it more because I think Boston's not as talented of a team. And I think if you go from winning, sweeping your first round, blowing out your opponent in Game 1 of the second round,
yes.
and then all of a sudden you get blown out in Game 2 and then can't protect home court in Game 3, all those good feelings start to turn the exact opposite direction. So I think this game, you would say, well, it's more critical for Milwaukee to get home court back. I don't believe that. I think it is more critical for Boston to show that Game 2 was the aberration in the series and to continue to keep home court in this series.
Nick, I agree with you as far as Boston. I believe that this is the pivotal game for them, if they can keep the home court, but also for a couple guys. Giannis, big game for him, huge game for Jason Tatum, because I believe Kyrie will do Kyrie-type things. Jason Tatum, time for him to be able to show back up.
What'd you say earlier?
Hashtag, where you at?
Where you at, Jason?
4 for 17 in the series.
All right,
Tatum.
I really love this next story. On to football. Now, a lot of people wonder why six-time Super Bowl champ Tom Brady is the 18th highest paid QB in the league. But I think we found our answer. Brady commented on his salary by saying, quote, my wife makes a lot of money. All right, Chris Carter, other than the fact that Giselle's a complete baller, what else do you make of Brady's comments?
Man, okay, Tom Brady. Man, he did Tom versus Time. He gave us a little insight, man, showed us behind the scenes. Man, showed us what makes him to be great, his overall commitment to everything he's doing. Gave us, some precious time with his family. Mm-hmm. Now he's talking about mama and how much bread she make. We've been talking about it.
Well,
I'm so glad.
I'm glad he said something.
Yeah, because he's married to a baller.
Right.
Baller. And he is the best baller of all the ballers.
And so right. I think it's because this has been something people say about Tom a lot. Well, he can take this less money. We even had a former player, a contemporary colleague of his say something similar. Not everyone's wife makes the money.
Yeah, Dak.
Dak said that exactly.
He's
right.
Like,
I
just call it
who
out.
It was.
Call out.
But for... for Brady to publicly say it on a late night TV show, just be like, listen, the reality is when your wife makes into the 8 figures a year, it's easier to not worry about if squeezing the Patriots for an extra 7 to 8 million.
But just like in classic Patriot way, they say the right thing and that ends the question.
Yep.
Hey, well, Tom, don't you feel bad? All these guys are, no, man.
That's like
Mama makes money.
New definition of dual income household.
Yes.
All right. Ending now with Kyler Murray. Now, if you were wondering when the first overall pick was going to get his starting time, well, the Cardinals, they're going to not really keep you guessing. GM Steve Keim did not hesitate to say that Kyler would be the day one starter. But head coach Cliff Kingsbury simply said, quote, we'll see. All right. I'm confused. Chris Carter, any reason not to have Kyler start week one?
What's today's date?
May 3rd.
I didn't know you could win a job in May.
Ooh.
Like, I mean, if what we talk about in the NFL, we talk about the best athletes and the best competition. I always tell people, hey, kids, don't worry about the draft. Don't worry. They just laying assignments.
Right.
If you run the 200 meters and you would having the prowess on the track being a runner, you know, lane four and lane five, they got the best lane assignments. But don't tell me if I'm in lane one and lane eight, I can't win. So now everyone in that quarterback room, the general manager said it, and he's basically only repeating it if the owner told him, and the coach is basically going to do what the general manager said because the coach just got there. So now those guys in the room, regardless of how they perform, because you're supposed to have a competition every single day. And it's one thing that I try to let people know, quarterbacks are treated totally different. That's the only room they don't want competition. They're not treated like the other players. Because everyone else, they say, oh, man, do your job. You're going to be fighting for your job every day.
Or sing for your supper in all those other rooms.
They are not doing him a favor by telling him. This is no different than if you're a five-star recruit and you decide to go anywhere. Earl Bruce, who recruited me, told me. I was the number one wide receiver in the country. I don't promise no kid. I don't care what kind of resume that they're going to start. He said, but I plan on being the coach the first game. And if Chris Carter's not out there, I'll be shocked.
Right.
He said, but you got to go do the work. You got to go beat all these other people out. And that competition, when you remove that, I don't think it's in the best interest of the player.
Well, it undermines the incentive. Real quick, Nick, why are quarterbacks treated differently in your experience, Chris? Why are they in this separate categorization?
I think that coaches coddle them a little more, and they don't want them to be thinking about the other battles that other players have to think about. And from a leadership standpoint, it's important to know who's going to be the guy. So I can understand why they say, okay, this guy is going to be driving. But he can't. If he wrecks the car, he can still drive?
Well, listen, this is Cliff Kingsbury, who's been an NFL coach for 20 minutes, had savvier answers on, he was on Adam Schein's radio show, he was on Rich Eisen's radio show, and he was asked about this, and he said, listen, we didn't draft a kid number one overall to never play him, but I can't tell you he's going to be the week one starter. Conversely, Steve Keim, the GM, who's been a GM for a long time now, I think this is going into his seventh year running the Arizona Cardinals, he was asked about this, and he said, he just flatly said, yes. Is he going to be the week one starter? He said yes. He was then rebutted. Wait, you answered that pretty quickly. You have any question? No. Where is the win here in anointing him the starter week one? There is none. This, for me, is a legitimately big story in this regard. It makes me further concerned that Kyler Murray is not necessarily going to have the infrastructure in place for him to be as successful as possible. Baker Mayfield's drafted number one overall. He wasn't anointed the starter and did not start week one.
But being drafted in the first round, Nick, what does that say typically in our recent NFL history?
Everyone starts at some point in the rookie year.
Yes.
All of them do. The only one who almost didn't was Patrick Mahomes, and even he started week 17, but that was a playoff team the year before and a playoff team that year. We know he's going to start at some point, but I can give you a dozen reasons why anointing him the starter week one is foolish. One is, you don't know how he's going to consume the playbook, how he's going to consume training camp.
Yep.
And if all of a sudden, it doesn't mean he's not going to be a great player, but if you realize in mid-August, man, he is a ways away from even being better than Brett Hundley.
No, he's going to be.
Right. And so, just real quick, if you haven't said this, him not starting week one is not a news story. You're allowed to be like, it's not because he isn't consuming the info.
Right.
It's because this is our plan.
Right.
But now, if he's not starting week one, the conversation in Arizona's already going to be, pick the wrong guy. What's wrong with Kyler? There's that. What if you get to camp and he is way better than Hundley, but you realize your offensive line is even worse than it was last year, and you're worried that they're going to need a few weeks to gel as an offensive line, and you don't want him to get annihilated on September 8th. Why would you announce this today? Where is the win in Steve Keim telling the world he's playing today?
I don't see it, Nick, and I totally agree with you. There's some things that you're only going to learn, and you learn them in NFL games. There's certain things you're going to learn in training camp. There's certain things you're going to learn in the preseason. The defenses that he's going to face are preseason defenses. They will be as vanilla as he will ever see. When they kick it off September 8th, I mean, it's going to be, lightning, thunder. They're going to be throwing everything at him week number one. I don't think that he's best being prepared by announcing it this week, because this is the thing about quarterback. It's hard to practice quarterback and simulate the game to impossible in practices. Every other position, except the kicker and the quarterback, because you can't put the pressure on the kicker of this being the last game, the wind is going sideways, the crowd, all that, and you can't get close to the quarterback in practice. So how am I going to know he's going to react? How am I going to know that the shortest first round pick ever that he can't see? Because in practice, guys are peeling off. They can't hit the quarterback. So how do we find out about quarterbacks? We find out about them in the game.
And just one other note on this, because I think Kyler probably will, most likely in a fair competition, would beat out Brett Hundley. I think that would happen. But you now with the Arizona Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury's told the whole world, oh, we're going to run 5 wide receiver sets. Why? Why tell the world that? Let them come see it. The GM's now told the whole world who's starting week one. Why? Why give that edge to your opponent? But the last point on this, I just want your thoughts on it quickly, is you talk about all the time, players know. Players are on the field. If he isn't better than Brett Hundley, when you're trying to build something in Arizona, what does it do to the veterans on the team that are going into the season fresh, trying to win, trying to shock the world, if they know, wait, Brett Hundley has been killing this guy in practice. He's not ready. It is too much for him at this moment, but he's been anointed.
What happens is it starts to eat away at the locker room.
Right.
Because Hundley starts to talk to his little clique of friends. And you know what his friends tell him? Man, you're right, man. The film doesn't lie. You are better than him. And then they talk to their little group of friends. So now then you have part of the locker room where they should be pulling for Kyler. No, they're not pushing against him. But in every NFL team they've been to, it's been the best player.
Right.
And then now they get to Arizona, and it's not the best player anymore.
Well,
it's a problem.
I love about this game is a meritocracy.
It's
got to be at every position. Otherwise, now you're tying your hands.
And Kyler would like to go win it.
Yeah.
Kyler wants to be the week one starter, but not announced May 2nd.
Right.
It's because of what he does in July and August leading up to the season.
All right, fellas. Well, moving on now to the Cowboys. Now, they are coming off a pretty good season. 10 wins, NFC East title, right? Now, they spent the offseason locking up star defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence. And they also got Dak a new weapon in Randall Cobb. So, I think you could say expectations are high. Just ask Jerry Jones, who said this. There is no tangible reason we shouldn't be expected to be better than we were last year. Full statement there. CC, you agree with Jerry Jones?
I think the Cowboys, when I look at them on paper, I don't think they'll be worse than last year. And I think that they'll get off to a better start than they did last year. So I could see the Cowboys being a team that got better this year. I believe that Amari Cooper working with Dak in this offseason, and I also believe that Dak's going to get the kind of contract that, man, they do wonders for you, not only for your bank account, but they do wonders for your psyche. Yeah. When people invest millions of dollars in you, regardless of what they say on TV, radio, and everything, you know you have a franchise. Up to this point, people have said it, oh, he's our franchise quarterback. But they're getting ready to put the money on the wood. And that's going to make what they say good. And that should be able to help out the player. Typically, I haven't seen a guy who is a legitimate NFL franchise quarterback, when they give him that money, him to go the other way. So I think that security will be able to help Dak out. I believe their defense will be just as good. They still got to be able to try to make some plays on the back end. Robert Quinn, I believe, will help them on the other side as far as a rusher, getting him from Miami. So, yes, Jerry, I'm with you on this. Everything I can always co-sign for Jerry. But in this one, I believe that they'll be better, and I believe that start becomes very, very important to the season.
I think having Amari for the full season is the biggest key here, pardon me. The Randall Cobb addition's nice. Michael Gallup's development from year one to year two should be nice. But the key is Dak, from the very beginning of the season, having a reliable number one receiver. So I do think the Cowboys should be a more formidable opponent, should be a better team. That doesn't necessarily mean I think they're going to win more games. They won 10 games last year. They won a playoff game last year.
Yes.
It is hard to get into that 11, 12 win threshold. Nobody thinks they're 13, 14 wins. So we're really talking in the margins here. But my real concern for the Dallas Cowboys, as far as will they be able to do what they did last year, is so much of their success, or just their ability to tread water early in the season before they got Amari, was based on having a top 5 defense. Now, will that, we know top 5 offenses year after year tend to be around the same teams. Defenses have a lot more fluctuation because there's turnover luck. There's different things like that. When you don't have Randy Gregory, David Irving, when you're relying on Robert Quinn, when you are, it's no longer going to be, wow, look at what we got from Jalen Smith that we didn't expect. We are expecting now to get that from Jalen Smith. Byron Jones had a career year last year. Will he maintain one of the best corners in the league level, or will he regress a little bit? To me, I have real confidence the offense should be much more effective in the beginning of this season than it was last season, but is that offset a bit by a defensive regression? And then the last point with the Cowboys, where they have spent their money is their offensive line, and was last year an outlier year as far as the highest paid offensive line being a good but not great offensive line, or is Tyron Smith no longer one of the three best left tackles in football? Are those guys, what is the status with Travis Frederick coming back from missing a year with the Guillain-Barré syndrome? So those are, to me, legitimate questions that don't have to do with Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I believe Travis Frederick getting him back, it will affect the quarterback, but also affect, there's no more unity than in that offensive line. And they really missed him last year. It helps the tackles. He controls the line calls. So it makes the game a lot simpler. So if he's able to get back to being close to the player that he was, he's participating in the offseason workouts. So Stink told us, typically in this his case, Mark Schlereff, he had the same thing. It took him about a year to start getting his strength back, and then the following year, he was back to the level of play.
Because there's no reason Dak Prescott should be the second most sacked quarterback in football. Right. That's ridiculous. And so with the money they're spending on that offensive line, even without Travis Frederick, so they need to get back to being that type of team to go along with having the Dak-Amari combination for 16 full games.
All right, fellas, my question to you both real quick. It's not like the Cowboys were disappointing in the season. Where they've been disappointing is in the postseason. Do you think that these upgrades that they've made in the offseason, so to speak, will translate to postseason?
Well, we believe they're in the postseason. We believe that they're good enough to be in the postseason. It's hard on the win total. The NFC is stacked. So typically, as a team, we judge their wins or are they better. But we believe they can be better with not reaching that 10-win total.
And they won a playoff game last year. To me, that was a big step. Now, to take a step further, now you're talking about a conference championship game where you haven't seen them in over two decades. So that's the question, but I think it's too early to say right now.
Too early. All right. Well, I can't wait for the season, personally. Coming up, the Steph finger injury opened up the door a little bit for the Rockets to get on in there. That's ahead on First Things First. Too much fun here, fellas. All right, back here on First Things First, and we are joined by NBA champ Antoine Walker.
What's up, man? Hey. Morning.
We have a rating system as far as our co-host and everything. Dude is shooting up the charts. Nick Wright is sponsoring them. Dude is shooting up. And I'm telling you, hey,
Antoine's one of my favorites.
I was like, Nick, dude said a good point. He's like, oh, Chris, he's the best. I was like, calm down, Nick. And Nick's like, hold on.
You know what it is? Nick is a fierce advocate. That's his
spirit.
This is the thing. I knew you and everything. Nick gets so jealous because I know all the people and everything. He's trying to adopt you. Like, he selected you.
These are lies. Good to see
you. I like it, Nick. Appreciate it, brother.
No problem, man.
All the help I can get.
And when I win that bet from Kendrick Perkins, you coming? You win. Yeah.
All right, fellas. All right, Antoine, I'm going to start with you on this. Bucks Celtics, game 3, tonight in Boston. The series currently tied 1-1. Now, Giannis is looking to build off his dominant 29-point game 2 performance. Kyrie, on the other hand, well, he's trying to forget that 4 of 18 shooting woe he had Tuesday night's blowout loss. Antoine, which team do you think needs tonight more?
I think the Celtics needed more. I think when you look at what the Celtics and their body of work and the season that they had, they won 5 games in a row, had a bad blowout loss. They haven't went through adversity yet in this playoffs. And we saw during the season they have their highs and lows. And you don't want to make this a 2-game losing streak now. This is when Kyrie starts to question himself in the media. So this can be really bad if they lose game 3. I think it's very important the Celtics come out and get this win. But also, they got to figure out a way to get Jason Tatum playing better. I mean, it's starting to be, he's averaging 4 points, 22, 24% in this series. He has to get back to playing good basketball if they want to win this series. They can't win this series with him only averaging 4 points a game.
I agree with you entirely that emotionally speaking, a loss for the Celtics could be bigger than typically a home loss in game 3 when its series is 1 apiece, because they were all season long, Kyrie and others, the positive message for the Celtics was wait till we get to the playoffs. You know what? It's long season, figuring stuff out. Wait till we get to the playoffs. And they, in the first round, they were like, yeah, what did we tell you? And in the first game of the second round, they were like, what did we tell you? If now all of a sudden you get blown out, and then the one thing that was your suit of armor last year, they are unbeatable at home. It took an epic performance from LeBron in Game 7 of last year's Eastern Conference Finals for them to finally lose one game at home. They, over the last 2 postseasons now, if my math's right, it would have been 13-1 in that building. If all of a sudden you lose 2 in a row to the Bucks and you lose your first home game, and the Bucks take home court back, then there is all those questions. Then there are those, wait, was the aberration our game one rather than Milwaukee's game two? Milwaukee, meanwhile, if they lose game one in Boston, or the game three, but the first game in Boston, they go into game four saying, man, we just need a split to take home court back. Well, you know what I mean? Our job is to come to Boston and get a split. So I feel like the pressure is more on the Boston Celtics this evening.
Now, a question for you, because I know you've played in a lot of these critical games. And a lot of you talk about Tatum, this game critical for him at this stage of his career to be able to help out Kyrie. Giannis, after the regular season that he had, losing game number one, bounced back. The team helped him in game two, hitting 23s. Do you expect Giannis, because a lot of people are saying this is the biggest game of his career. I don't think it's the biggest game of his career, but what are you expecting from Giannis in game number three in Boston?
I think he knows. I think from game one to game two, he knows he has to be aggressive. He has to continue to get to the free throw line. Got to the free throw line 18 times. He can't depend on his jump shot. He made a couple, obviously, but he has to continue to be aggressive. And then he has to depend on his teammates. He's got to be aggressive offensive as far as getting to the basket, kicking out, getting guys for open shots. And they got to make shots. I don't think they have to make 20. I mean, obviously, they made 20 in game two. If they can make 12 to 15 threes, it favors Milwaukee because they're a great three-point shooting team. And he also has to be aggressive and transition. That's when he's at his best, when he's being very aggressive in transition, getting it off the glass. This ain't the game for him. I think last year he learned, won six games last year against the Celtics. He understands what the level that he needs to be at for his team to win. But he has to be the guy to be aggressive. I want 25, 30 shots from him. I don't think it's a game that he can sit back and wait on others to get involved. He has to be the aggressive for this team.
Here's the other thing about when we talk about a player at Giannis' stage in his career, because you and I were talking about this before the show, about biggest game of his career. Giannis is in a spot where he's going to be playing consecutively every night.
Yes.
It's about what was the biggest game of Giannis' career as of a year ago? It was game six against the Boston Celtics in Milwaukee. Then guess what became the biggest game?
Right.
Game seven in Boston against the Celtics. And then what was the biggest game of his career? Well, first time he's in the second round, game one of this series. Now you're down 0-1. What's the biggest game of his career? Well, game two of this series. Now game three. So when you've never been there before.
Yeah, there's certain guys, him, Joel Embiid, and some other guys. They're superstars, but it's their first time at this level.
Right. Every game becomes, by definition, the biggest game of their career. And so it's different than a guy who is – I'll use LeBron as an example for a moment. LeBron had a bunch of playoff runs and been to the finals. But that game six in Boston, after he had been in the league 8 years, second year in Miami, down 3-2, that was a legitimate – this is the biggest, even though you've been to two NBA finals, even though you've been to past this round of the playoffs so many times, this is the biggest game of your career because so much is riding on it. That's different than a player, well, it's his first time in the second round, so I guess every game becomes the biggest game in his career.
Antoine, quick question for you to this exact point. I'm looking at these two guys behind you, and they couldn't be more opposite, right, in terms of narrative, even alone, right? Like you said, Giannis, I mean, the expectations are, of course, he's going to dominate and be great, but in a way, he's almost freer. Like, he gets to play a game in a lighter way because the expectations, to your point, Nick, are totally different for him. Kyrie seems heavy. He seems like there's so much on him, right, mentally, so many narratives he's trying to counteract. And when he has a night like he had in game two where he's just cold, how does he make that adjustment?
He should be heavy. This is a tough time for them. Their expectations was to win the NBA title.
Yeah.
And that's what they got to the Eastern Conference Finals without him and without Gordon Hayward, two All-Stars. They were expected to win the title. They didn't have the season that everybody thought they was going to have. We thought it was going to be a 60-win season. They were going to breeze through. They didn't do that. They came in as a fourth seed. And now you got a situation now, a guy like Giannis who went from the seventh seed to one. You know, the expectations changed for Giannis a little bit. This is a 60-win team, and they've put some pieces around him to see if they can get out this Eastern Conference. So I think the expectations from the start of the season are a little different. That's why I think it looks a little heavier on Kyrie than obviously Giannis.
Also, when you know, Giannis knows he'll be back in Milwaukee.
Right.
The whole franchise is around him. They've given the keys to the city.
Kyrie can be back if he wants to.
Right.
But that part right there is weighing on him.
Yes.
Well, and you mentioned no Kyrie, no Gordon Hayward last year. One note on Hayward. Hey, man, 1-for-5, a minus 30 in game two. Gordon Hayward, who had been playing better, he needs to show up tonight at home in Boston.
All right, Jason, Gordon, we hope to see y'all tonight in Boston. All right, Antoine, stick around.
Hashtag. Yes.
Coming show up.
Where are you at?
Hashtag, where you at? All right, did Joel Embiid and the Sixers prove that they are really the best team in the East? Some folks are saying that on the streets. That's next on First Things First. right, back here on First Things First. Now, the Cleveland Cavaliers have been a part of the last four NBA Finals, highlighted by their 2015-2016 title season, thanks in large part by five-time NBA All-Star champ Kevin Love. Kevin's joining us live in studio. So good to have you.
Good to see you, man. How are you?
Thank you, baby.
Mr. Cleveland.
Good seeing you, man.
Good to see you.
You remember those days, me yelling at you behind the bench?
Oh, yeah, behind the bench, yeah. Either I was messing up or I was playing extremely well. But you were yelling at me. It was a good balance. It was a good balance.
Well, I mean, that's my state.
Yeah.
That was my team.
And that is also your element right there.
Yes. Well, I mean, I was always pulling for you. I was pulling for you. And then you remember the picture that I had you take with the fan and everything? The lady had your jersey and everything. She's getting ready to leave her husband for you that night. I was a part of that, too.
Don't call him Kevin Love for nothing. Go ahead, Nick.
Thank you so much for joining us. You're here for a really good, important reason that we'll get to in just a bit. But we can jump in with the hoops. You obviously have been a part of the last four Eastern Conference champions.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's going to come to an end this year. Of these four teams in the East, they all have a legitimate case to be made that their best is the best. If you had to predict it, who do you think is best positioned of the four remaining teams to take your guys' spot as Eastern Conference champions?
Well, it's so tough. I mean, you saw Milwaukee bounce back last game against a team in Boston who started clicking at the right time. I mean, obviously, they need a couple other guys to step up if they're going to beat Milwaukee. But their game three, I'm excited to watch. They're going to they're going to beat each other up, as you mentioned. So, coming out of that series, it's going to be tough to go against my guy, Kyrie. But, you know, the Greek Freak has been playing at an MVP-type level all year. So, you know, that's likely going to go seven games. It looks like it.
Right.
But it's tough to decide who's going to, you know, really come out of that. On the other side of things, you know, Kawhi is playing at such a high level. But I think if Embiid continues to produce the way that he is, I think, you know, Philly's likely going to come out of that one. And I actually like them. You know, depending on who they play, if Embiid's playing at a high level and he's healthy, they're going to be tough to beat.
In the Western Conference, we know that the Warriors, trying to go to their fifth straight final, the elusive chance to try to three-peat, you guys are only teams in the NBA that can really be able to assimilate some of that pressure.
Sure.
Give us some of the things that you know that they're going through that are going to be challenged, not X's and O's, but just off the court of how you have to be at a high level for such a long time and how exhausting it is.
Well, it's that sustained excellence, like you said, and going to four straight finals. I know I was out the first year, but just continuing to stay locked in mentally is a hard thing to do. You have 82 games plus. They're probably playing 100-plus games a season. You know, being around these guys every single day, you have to, you know, there's going to be some things, as David West mentioned after they won it last year, there were some things behind the scenes that you didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens every single year. And you either keep those things internal, or if you were like us and thrived under chaos, a lot of those things, you know, were out in the open and you guys were sitting here talking about. So you have to continue to have that motivation. I believe that they have that because so many people want to see, you know, dethrone them and take their crown, but they're going to be another team that's really tough to beat because look at their personnel. Kerr has them really running their stuff, and you know, adding a guy even like Bogut to their system. He was so tough to play against in many places, but especially for them because he can pass, hold down the middle, and he's just another guy. A lot of dirty, best screener in the league.
Best. That's one way to put it.
Hey, listen, if you can set a dirty screen and get away with it most of the time, you're the best screener in the league. And getting those guys open, all they need is a second.
All right, Kevin. So you know all too well what this Warriors matchup feels like, having done it four times. Can you speak a little bit about how tough they are to guard when pretty much every night they have four all-stars on the court at all times?
Yeah, and then with Draymond playing that position and really getting to roam in the paint and whether he's playing against the four or the five, he can guard any position. I think he's oftentimes overlooked. Klay being the third scorer is often overlooked. But between Steph, Klay, and KD, having to guard those guys is really tough because you'll be able to switch 1 through 4, 1 through 5. You have to watch a lot of film. You have to drill it every single walkthrough because there's a lot of switches, a lot of mismatches, a lot of cross matches in transition. And then their bench. Always great. Everybody knows their roles, plays their position. And, you know, I look at a guy I won a world championship with in 2010, and Andre Iguodala, that is a real special player. You know, 2012 in London, played with him as well. He's just continuing to play his part and kind of flies under the radar with them.
Obviously, the story for the Warriors thus far this postseason has been the tear Kevin Durant's been on ever since he got challenged a bit game two, the Patrick Beverley game. He reminded the whole world, I'm Kevin Durant.
Right.
He reminded himself as well. And since then, he's playing, I think, the best basketball of his career. And that's shifted the conversation to, is Kevin Durant the best basketball player in the league? You were a part of last year what I considered to be, aside from the championship, maybe the highest
historic
level.
Historic run.
What LeBron did in that. And that's no disrespect to your contributions, but your team had three total makeovers during the year.
Sure.
You then, at the tail end of the run, got concussed. You had missed essentially game six and seven of the Eastern Conference Finals going into the NBA Finals. I feel like we have a short memory and forget what he was doing this time last year. Can you put in context what LeBron did from your viewpoint in the Eastern Conference playoffs last year leading to game one of the NBA Finals?
Right. And I think behind the scenes, even with KD, too, he's saying, like, you know, especially after the last two seasons and the finals runs that he went on and playoff runs and seasons that he's had, but he's even playing at a higher level now. And I think behind the scenes, he's saying, hey, nobody can guard me. Nobody can guard me. Nobody can mess with me. I'm, you know, I'm Kevin Durant, as he mentioned. So, but watching LeBron, even the last and playing with him the last 4 years, there were times where, you know, I'd go to the bench and there'd be a timeout, and I'd just say to guys, like, you know, we could be. I think we're watching the best ever. Like, this is wild. You know, he went on such a run last year. There was the you know, shot he hit off the glass where he went full court, and just so many games where either it was a triple double and it was almost like if he didn't get one, we're like, oh, well, you know, he kind of had an off game. And now, that's just what he brings to the table every single night. And that's just not easy to do.
And knowing what you know, and I was a huge Kevin Love fan before you got with LeBron. I'm one of LeBron. I've been cheering for LeBron, but because your days in Minnesota and playing there with the Timberwolves. After what you experienced with LeBron, how upset does it make you when you hear people talk about, wow, man, LeBron, it's toxic there. Like, I wouldn't join. What would you do join back with LeBron? And or what do you think the feeling is in the real NBA? Because we're not in the real NBA.
Right.
We cover it. But let us know what players really think about them joining LeBron in L.A.
And it's a what have you done for me lately league. I mean, he went to a team where he knew it was going to be a challenge, and Bron was he was ready for that challenge. Obviously, he got hurt and was out a large amount of time. So losing his leadership for that amount of time for the young guys is very tough because you're trying to erase bad habits. You know, there's certain things away from the floor that you're trying to erase those bad habits as well. And just, you know, having that vocal leadership on the floor, it's just tough to lose a guy like LeBron. But, you know, you actually had to come to expect it as well. Being in L.A., all the eyes are on you. You're LeBron James, the best player in the world. And, you know, some of this stuff is unfair, but he's so strong about that stuff. I've been around it enough. He would just tell all of us, and myself included, they're not going to divide us. And so the last thing LeBron James needs is more motivation. So I'm excited to see how he responds back, especially, you know, he's got a lot of miles on from going to so many straight finals, but a whole summer of work and working on his body and be able to reassess a number of things while making Space Jam 2.
Right. Can I follow up one question on the leadership part? Because I always thought that, and listen, I think LeBron's the greatest player to ever play.
Sure.
I also think that nobody's flawless. And there's that picture you have of him right there with the palms to the sky. Sometimes that's because someone missed a rotation.
Right.
Sometimes it's because he missed a rotation and he's just, and the little, like, hey, it's somebody else's fault.
Right.
And you seem to take a lot of that criticism. And I'm feeling it really interesting to hear you say, talk about him not as a player, everyone knows he's a great player, but as a leader. How, is there an element to where some guys aren't, though, built to deal with his style of leadership, his style of on-the-court coaching? And was that difficult for you early on, going from being the man in Minnesota to having a clear hierarchy in Cleveland that he was at the top of?
Well, I think it was a lot of layers, too. Like, I went to a, you know, gone from not making the playoffs and, you know, being an all-NBA guy and being the first guy to then having to learn to not only accept my role, but more so sacrifice in a big way. So I wasn't going to be getting the shots that I regularly got. Had to take on still a really great role, almost like a Chris Bosh role in Miami. So yep. That took time. And for me, I think Bron really wanted the best out of me. And sometimes it was some tough love. And like I said, we were a team that thrived under chaos. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people heard about, a number of things that went on. But a lot of it was, you know, what the media wanted to take with a storyline and what, you know, you guys have to talk about this for, 24-hour news cycles. That's just the way it is. So he's seen a lot of that in L.A. as well. But, you know, for me, it's something that you just have to learn, hopefully learn quickly. But you have to establish some sort of a comfort zone. That's why I think with the younger players, I hate calling them the young fellas because they're learning quickly.
And it makes you an old guy.
Yeah, it makes me an old guy. Like, I just finished my 11th year in the league, and I think Channing Frye on his retirement tour probably put a couple extra years on me. But I think it just takes a little bit of time, and I think you have to humble yourself and learn how to follow before you then learn how to lead. So it was a great learning experience for me, and 2016, that was a great year for Ohio.
Ring the show for that, absolutely. Yeah. So speaking of leadership, Kevin, you played for Ty Lue. But most, to me, in this conversation we were having earlier in the show about whether Ty Lue is the right fit for the Lakers right now, you had a firsthand seat as to the relationship between LeBron and Ty Lue. Mm-hmm. Do you think it would be the right move for the Lakers to bring Ty Lue to coach LeBron and the Lakers right now?
I love Ty Lue. I think it would be if he's not their first pick, he should be right there at the top because he's an unbelievable X's and O's guy, a player's coach. A guy that's very approachable that you can talk to. And I think with the personnel that they have, he would be great, as well as already having feeling familiar and being familiar with LeBron and having that not only friendship, but being able to coach LeBron and getting his ear because Ty really knows the game. And he's been around the game, been around, Jordan. He's been around those great Laker teams, obviously Shaq and Kobe, been around Phil, been around Doc. I mean, a lot of great basketball minds. So, I think the more time that Ty Lue has as a head coach, he's only going to get better. So I think he's a he would be a great decision.
That pedigree that you just listed there, Kevin, do you think that gives Ty like an basically insurmountable advantage over anybody else that's in this conversation?
And he's an L.A. guy. It doesn't always work well for people like that. But I think Ty Lue is a guy that he's made to coach a team like L.A. and, either inherit or take over a great team like we have, but also build a culture, build a team, and, know how to deal with each and every player as an individual.
Your legacy when you are done playing is going to be multi-layered. It's going to be you helped bring a championship back to Cleveland. It's going to be that you were the best long court passer since your namesake, Wes Unseld.
We talked about that.
We were talking about before the show. It's going to be a guy that was 25-15 and found ways to then develop an outside, all these things. But it might be maybe first and foremost, first paragraph of it, a guy who really brought a conversation about mental health into the forefront of major American pro sports, making yourself vulnerable, talking about your own struggles and trying to help other people. You've taken it a step further. You launched the Kevin Love Fund last year in 2018. For an audience that doesn't know what it is, can you tell them about that and what your goals are with it?
Yeah, well, it's inspiring people to live their healthiest lives while providing tools to then enrich both their physical and mental state. So it's something that I'm very passionate about. To be honest with you, it's not something that I never thought I'd be here.
No, absolutely.
And I think a lot of people look at mental health. There's a taboo and a stigma around it, and people don't look. I think sometimes people feel like people will look at you as weak or look at you as unreliable. I think that was something that being vulnerable and sharing my story, I was very worried or even scared about was how my teammates were going to react. Because my basketball has always been my safe place. It's always been a place where I've gone and, have been able to express myself and get away, from the norms having anxiety or having my bouts with melancholy or depression. So it's always been a safe place for me. And you know, having my teammates know what I was dealing with and what I've been dealing with since as early as I can remember, that was a really scary thought. But in pressing send on my Players Tribune article and mentioning that everybody's going through something and dealing with something either firsthand or, you know, within arm's reach or arm's distance, it has established a huge community around such a great cause. So I think moving forward with the Kevin Love Fund, it's really going to it doesn't discriminate. It's not going to be centered around any one demographic. But, you know, we have really, really great partners in this and Bring Change to Mind and Just Keep Living. We're working with UCLA Athletics. We're working with Headspace, a meditation app. So we're finding different ways to affect the masses as well as affect kids. I think that next generation is so big in what we do. And as parents, that's why working with Channing Frye, I got to understand it even more from his perspective. Having the kids that he does, great kids at all different ages, just seeing it from that perspective and how the youth is going to be able to respond because they are so receptive of change. They are willing to change at that age, and the brain is functioning and hitting at a whole different level then. So I think it's super important.
Well, it takes a special person to identify that they have some type of weakness. It takes another level of person to be able to share that with the general public. Right. And what you're going through as far as mental health is something I've experienced as far as addiction.
Right.
You don't want to show that weakness, but ultimately, that cause needs a face and a voice to it.
Right.
And you arrive at the same time. So credit to you for what you're doing.
And you're still you.
And we can still be ourselves, right, but let people know along the way that we have gotten plenty of help to help us develop. And also, it takes another special person to put their own resources, to put some foundation, to put some things around it, to get UCLA and other people to be involved. So congratulations for
Absolutely.
What you're doing.
And if people haven't read the Players Tribune article, they need to, because it was the part that I drew on it just real quick was you had all these things going for you, and it was the death of your grandmother that so so for people that might think, man, I've got a good marriage, or I love my kids, I got a good job, but I am still feeling some type of way.
Right.
It is the real human component that could seem somewhat minor that can really derail where you're headed. I thought it was so important. I think it's so wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations, Kevin, on all the work you're doing. And I saw Commissioner Adam Silver was with you when you accepted your recent champion award. How supportive has the league been around this?
The league has been amazing. I think I mentioned it the other night when Adam had given me the award, and I said to him just a big thank you to him and the league office because they've continued to grow our game in such a global way, in such a big way. And not only have they you know, supported us in some of these major topics that we're able to discuss and the reach that we have and the platform we have as well, but they actually are trying to push us into those topics. So they allow us to have a voice. They support us in topics such as these. And I think that's super important, being able to have that type of synergy and marriage. And it's just huge where the NBA is going with this, because I do believe we are more than just athletes, and we can make a big difference, especially, like I mentioned, in those kids' lives, because all it takes is that one child either to save his life or give him a different perspective, or like talking about LeBron earlier, you know, giving him a school to go to, further his life, take him to college, and it's just beautiful things around the league that guys are doing.
Congrats.
You're doing
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.